is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening and welcome. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto, and I'm joined with my co-host Dr. Wesley Francis, who is a Bahamian surgical oncologist, cancer surgeon, and general surgeon. And we are pleased to have as our guest again Mr. Calvin Green, who is a veteran of the tourism industry. He's also a youth leader, a community and church leader. He's involved in Junkanoo on many levels. Welcome, Mr. Calvin Green and Dr. Wesley Francis.
Good evening, Bahamas.
Welcome, Doc, and welcome, Bahamas.
So we are pleased to speak about a very interesting topic, and I hope every topic that we choose to speak about is interesting, but this one hits the heart of the matter for our country, and that is alcohol intake, alcohol use, the excessive use of alcohol. And we'll even talk about the ill health effects of even low or moderate alcohol intake. But the show is geared towards just providing information related to alcohol intake. You, of course, are free to make your own informed decisions. So we're not here sitting on a soapbox dictating anything, but we're just trying to provide information and trying to elicit important dialogue that is a huge epidemic, pandemic, or whatever you want to say, a plague, the black heart of our society. It's hitting every aspect of our society in so many ways. It's breaking up so many families. We always speak about, we all know someone who's been hit hard by cancer. We all know someone who's been hit hard by alcohol as well. So the hard facts about alcohol, 1 in 3 persons are going to have a problem with alcohol in their lifetime. 2.6 million persons are going to die related to alcohol-related causes. That's over 7,000 persons per day. So essentially, every bodily organ is negatively impacted by alcohol. So understanding alcohol or any other addiction, we first look at the 4 C's. And the first C is the loss of control. You tried to stop, you tried to slow down, and you failed. Second C is compulsive use. Alcohol and its use is causing you to spiral out of control, and it's controlling your life. The third C is consequence, so negatively impacting your life or your health on many levels, whether it's your job or your relationship, etc. And then the fourth is craving, a strong psychological urge to use alcohol. So some interesting quotes. Frank Sinatra once said, "Alcohol may be man's worst enemy, but the Bible says, love your enemy." This is an anonymous quote. "When I got sober, I thought giving up was saying goodbye to all the fun and all the sparkle. And it turned out to be just the opposite. That's when the sparkle started for me." So talk about all the consequences that you've seen negatively, Mr. Calvin Green, in terms of alcohol on our Bahamian society. Where do we start? It's such a vast topic and it's so hard-hitting. Where do you want to start in terms of the negative impact of alcohol?
Well, the first thing I'll begin by asking, are Bahamians functioning alcoholics? Are we functioning alcoholics? That's the first thing I will ask. And you ask that question because, you know, I'm in areas and places, and you see guys come in, and they're buying alcohol, and you think that they're buying it because they've just knocked off from work and they're having a, and they need something to calm down or to just relax them. And they're actually buying alcohol before they go to work. So I ask the question, are we functioning alcoholics? We go to work drunk, or, I mean, and yes, so the question is, how many people actually come to work drunk? And I would dare to say a lot of people do, because a lot of people buy alcohol before they actually even start their shift. And so alcoholism is a significant public health issue in the Bahamas, deeply rooted in cultural practices and excavated by social and economic factors.
So I think it's important that we're not just talking about excessive use of alcohol. We're not just talking about binge drinking. We're even talking about casual intake of alcohol. We're even speaking about a glass of red wine once a day, or a beer once a day, or every other day. And there's a strong link, because alcohol affects every bodily organ. Let's not even talk about the psychological impact, which we'll get into. But we're overwhelmed with cancers. So we need to look at, as we've always discussed, Dr. Francis, modifiable risk factors. So you, unfortunately, or fortunately, I'm glad that you are came back to provide service for our country, but you have to deal with cancer every day. And I'm sure it's sobering, and it's can be a difficult occupation in terms of always seeing persons who are fighting cancers, and that's one of the more difficult things you have to face in life. Providing information to someone that they're dying of cancer or they're diagnosed with cancer, and being with them every step of the way. But you also try to be preemptive and proactive, and that's what we also stress on this medical show, that we want to prevent you from going down the road to getting cancer. We want to prevent you from becoming obese or getting hypertension or diabetes, not just reacting. So when you talk about, when you speak to someone who's, let's say, 20 years old, and they have a strong family history of cancer, whether it's colon cancer or breast cancer, and they're male or female, and they're very worried because they feel that inevitably that's their fate. When we talk about modifiable risk factors, do you now, with the U.S. Surgeon General basically advocating sparing use of alcohol or no use of alcohol at all, because it's linked strongly to seven different cancers?
So in the spirit of education, and that's what this show is really about, we're always, I think every week, talking about modifiable and non-modifiable risk factors. Non-modifiable risk factors, your genetics. I mean, if you're born with, for example, a breast cancer gene or a gene that causes colon cancer early, you know, that you can't modify. But certainly modifiable risk factors, things like lifestyle, and one of them is certainly alcohol. Alcohol is what is known as a class 1 or group 1 carcinogen. And what is a carcinogen is a substance that has a direct link to formation of cancer, and that is what we know. And this is what the U.S. Surgeon General publication last year, January, showed, that there is a direct link between alcohol and several different cancers. And not in significant amounts, in any amount. And so the reason why they put that out there is really as a primary prevention. You know, in medicine, we have health promotion, primary prevention, secondary prevention. And one of the things that publication wanted to do is to, the same labels that are on cigarettes, on tobacco intake, should now be on alcohol intake, to warn people ahead of time that, listen, this thing has a direct effect on your health, and it can lead to formation of different cancers: oral cancer, esophageal cancer, stomach cancer, colon cancer, pancreas cancer, even breast cancer. All of these things are they've demonstrated a direct link. And I just want to mention, what are other kind of class one or group one carcinogens? If you look at some environmental things, asbestos, silica dust, coal tars, UV radiation, chemicals such as benzenes, formaldehyde, plutonium, all of these we know as group one carcinogen. When you look at infections, for example, HPV, and we talk about that all the time here, HPV causes, it's human papillomavirus, which causes cervical cancer. It's a group one carcinogen, and it's classified in the same breath as with alcohol, okay? It's compared in the same way. And Helicobacter pylori, which we know is a bacteria that lives in the stomach, and it can also cause stomach cancer. So these are the things that alcohol are now being compared with. And so there isn't a question about it. It's not a debate. It's a direct correlation. Not only just correlation, but even causation. We know that the breakdown, the liver breaks down alcohol into acetaldehyde, and that is what leads to abnormal repair or prevention of repair of DNA. And this is what directly leads to formation of cancers. And so we know it. And so now the message has to get out there. Listen, just how we talk about tobacco causing cancers or lung cancers, and that is well known. Now, tobacco, alcohol is a direct result and cause of all of these other cancers.
So in the last decade, there's been a lot of research and greater understanding in terms of our own immunity as human beings and also what causes us to develop cancer and what is a preventative for cancer. And the gut microbiome is very important.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, alcohol negatively impacts the gut microbiome. So that lowers our immunity. That puts us at risk of innumerable infections. It also increases our risk of innumerable cancers, including, so when we talk about alcohol, it's the third leading preventative cause of cancer. Third. 15%, that's almost 1 in 6 breast cancers in the United States of America was found to be and continues to be directly linked to alcohol intake. And we're talking about even moderate alcohol intake, such as a solitary drink a day or even every other day. So would you advocate for someone, well, we're all at high risk of cancer in our society. We're overwhelmed with every cancer there is. But let's say a certain individual in a certain family or someone who's very concerned about cancer and potentially preventing it, would you advocate abstinence from alcohol or intake?
So there is no safe level. Okay, and that is what the publication from the U.S. Surgeon General put out there. There's no safe level. Even though the risk exists and it gets higher the more you consume, but there's no safe level. So before this publication came out, we often told people, moderation, right? Everything is okay with moderation. And that's just something I used to tell people, like, but now, no, there's no safe level. And so we should abstain. Now, that's a hard thing, right? I mean, we can't sit here on on a soapbox and say, oh, totally abstain from alcohol. I mean, alcohol is so embedded into our culture and in everything that we do. It's a part of our social beings.
But then we look at the other aspect. If we look at how many children are crying because their mother died of breast cancer at 38 or 42, if across the board we limit our alcohol intake or even aim for abstinence in terms of alcohol intake, 1 in 6 women in this country potentially will not develop breast cancer.
You know, I always say that you have to look at it holistically, right? And I think as an individual, one of the things that we do when we see patients is determine their overall risk factors for any kind of disease. And after establishing that, look at how you manage their risk and try risk reduction strategies. And certainly one of the risk reduction strategies would be to avoid any kind of alcohol intake, exercise that helps, avoid tobacco, have a healthy weight, and certainly the diet that you, you know, the food that you consume. And when you look at all of these collectively, so if you said 15% here, 10% here, all of that collectively comes together and reduces your risk. And this is how you as an individual can then manage your overall risk. Again, with the non-modifiable factors, you can't, certain things you just change. I mean, you can't change where you were born. You can't change the circumstances and into what you were born. But you certainly can change the way you live and the choices that you make that will impact your future. And so these are the things that we try to encourage people to do.
Mr. Green, let's talk about the breakdown of the family unit. Let's talk about the breakdown of the lives of fathers and husbands because of a reliance on alcohol. And that's just wearing away at the fabric of our society as a whole, where we now have a society where it's the matriarchal society, where women are predominantly, maybe 70-80% of families are run by women. And a lot of the breakdown of that family unit is attributed to alcohol. And the consequences of that and the impact on just the children, not to mention the wife and what she has to go through, bearing the brunt of the finances and every emotional and everything else that they have to provide for being both the father and the mother. What has alcohol done over the decades to our Bahamian society, just in terms of the family?
Well, we can really see the results of that every day as we move around in our country and we see what I always refer to as young men, males, everywhere in a way that there is no sense of direction, or they're just not there. And what I want to add to that is based on a report that we get here from, and it really starts, even though we get to the male, it really starts at a very early age among teens, where it says alcohol use among teens is at a crisis level. And this is a report from the Ministry of Health that raised dire concerns over the level of substance use among Bahamian teens. And the report said that the alcohol consumption has more than doubled from 32% to 74% currently. The report rose from a survey of more than 2,000 Bahamian students in public and private schools across 8 islands. And the results were compared to a survey taken in 1998 and 2013. Drunkenness also climbed from 21% to 27%. 3 out of every 4 teens who purchased alcohol were never asked to show an ID despite the legal drinking age of 18 years. This report was done in 2025, July 4th, by Dr. Sharita Moxie, who put this report out.
Well, we can just look driving around. We see the proliferation of liquor stores on almost every corner.
Yeah, every corner.
I mean, they'll be right next to a nursery, next
right
to a church, next to a primary school.
But the point I want to make, Doc, is you see, from the this is where they graduate. They graduate from teens into husbands who become what you would call solid alcoholics. And now they have a family. And so what else do you expect?
And what are they teaching their children?
And what are they teaching their children?
studies have shown that the vast majority of acts of violence have alcohol involved. When we look at the number of murders in our country and the link to alcohol, it's astonishing. When we look at statistics and studies worldwide, the vast majority of date rapes, alcohol is involved. Alcohol is negatively impacting our social structure, and it's continuing to get worse. It's very common for 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 11-year-olds to be drinking alcohol before they go to school, drinking when they come home. We are creating this problem because we're turning a blind eye to it. Why are we allowing the proliferation of liquor stores? Why are we allowing minors to consume alcohol and to purchase alcohol without any repercussions to the persons who are selling it to them, who do not care of the decay they're creating in our society? They're just trying to make a profit. And it's getting worse and worse. It's more so in the inner city. It's more so in the ghetto.
Absolutely.
You think you can go in near Lifer Key and put up all these different liquor stores and everything else? They won't allow it.
No.
But where is the voice of the common man?
I call it in the heartland. They bring these alcohol establishments into the heartland because that's where the most consumption occurs. And a fellow will buy alcohol before he buy food.
I think the typical Bahamian man probably spends 20% of his income on alcohol.
And so it's affecting also our life expectancy. I was looking at what our life expectancy in our country is because of alcohol for the male. It's 69 years, and for females, 76.
But then we have to understand the physiology behind it all. We're going to talk about how it affects every bodily system, but I don't think even those who love their children understand what alcohol intake is doing to their child. And we're talking about 6-month-old, 4-month-old, 9-month-old, who their grandmother or their mother was taught by the great-grandmother that child is teething. Give them a little bit of vodka. Give them a little bit of rum. Rub that on their gums. That alcohol intake is creating an alcoholic. It's astonishing that we do not understand what we're doing to our own children. And that is just a common something in every household or every other household in our society where we're giving our 3-month-old or 4-month-old alcohol. And obviously, they're developing a dependence on it. When their brain is being developed, when their bodily organs are being developed, we're creating a nation of alcoholics just from this old wives' tale that let's give a crying child or let's have a child sleep good 5 hours by giving them a little bit of rum.
Well, let's.
What do you have to say about that, Dr. Francis, as a physician?
I don't think it's probably practiced that often as you make it seem, right? I mean,
and my date was
okay, but you know, the alcohol act is an anesthetic, right? Yeah. That's why they put it in the teeth, right? Yeah. And so it numbs the area, and so it certainly the pain and the discomfort they get from it. Not trying to justify it, but I don't think that it's. Well, and again, it's a lack of knowledge, right? That we are not aware of what we're doing, and a lot of the things are.
Well, let me
the choices that we make today. Uh-huh. The results are so discounted. I mean, it's like we don't see these the consequences of it for the next 10, 20, 15, 20 years, and so that's what happens. You know, we discount it.
And pregnant women who drink.
Well, pregnant women, yeah.
Women who are breastfeeding who drink regularly.
Right. But you see, these are the choices that people make. I mean, I think a lot of women, I think women who they know if they're breastfeeding, they shouldn't drink alcohol. But again, we have to continue to raise the level of awareness and
well, I think
information.
We need to raise the alarm.
Well, yeah, we can create a sense of urgency, yes, because it is a problem. But I think education. I always believe that education is the equalizer, and education allows people to have more informed choices, to make more informed choices. And so we got to continue to educate, and put out the message out there that this is probably not the right thing to be doing to your children. If you're a pregnant woman, you shouldn't be drinking alcohol. That should be all out there on the airwaves.
If you're breastfeeding,
you shouldn't be drinking alcohol.
And you shouldn't be giving any child under the age of 18 any alcohol.
Absolutely.
But what I don't want us to do tonight is just gloss over the fact that, like this report says, alcoholic among Bahamian teens, and this is
now
2025, is a very, very serious thing. And the young teens carry these drinks into school. They drink it at lunchtime. That's a part of their beverage for lunch. Yeah. So I don't want us to minimize that. That is a very, and I just want to put, you know, alcohol has been a part of the Bahamian culture for centuries.
But
it's indoctrinated by the European colonial, and rum production became central to the economy and social life during the 18th, when we had 18th and 19th century, and we had rum running. And then with the tourism boom in the 20th century, further normalized alcohol consumption, associating it with leisure and celebration, which has contributed to widespread alcoholic use and abuse in our country.
Well, we have to understand why alcohol, there's so much reliance on alcohol, why it's so addictive to the average person. We have to look at how alcohol affects the brain, and there's so many ways of doing that. We can have a whole show just on the negative impact of alcohol on the brain, but let's look at alcohol leads to the release of dopamine, which essentially makes one feel good. It also binds to the part of the brain called the GABA system, which is basically our anti-anxiety system. So the same system, makes you relax. The same system that's acted upon by anti-anxiety medications like Xanax or Ativan, alcohol does the same thing. Alcohol actually leads to the release of endogenous opioids in our body, which acts like a natural painkiller. So we always talk about self-medicating with alcohol, and that's true. Physiologically, it provides a form of pain relief, whether it's physical or emotional pain. So it's very common in the Bahamas for persons of all ages, both genders, to self-medicate, we'll say drown their sorrows with alcohol, even on a daily basis. And sadly, that includes 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 15-year-olds of both sexes. And that's we're going down a very dangerous path, Bahamas. We have a call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Yes, sir. Good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah, you know, speaking about alcohol, right, I guess these are the things that the government should be regulating and affecting, right? But what about the fast food?
Well, that's a topic in itself. So yes, that's a serious. Like, what about the cigars? What about the cigarettes? What about the food additives? Yes.
Right. I mean, the fast food, the grease and the sugar, and you know what I mean.
That's another topic that we're going to basically get to. But yeah, we're talking about something that's seriously causing the degradation of our society. And we'll take it one at a time. But yes, alcohol is a major issue.
What about, you know, I see the minister I'll talk about of health care different ways of funding health care. You know what I'm saying? It's egregious that you need to find different ways of funding health care when there's no health insurance. You know what I mean? National health insurance. You know, things like they're catering to what you call it, to the suppliers of these things. Everything, the liquor supplies of the food and insurance and the like, you know what I'm saying? These are the things we need to address, you know?
I mean, alcohol is constantly marketed to all of us.
Right, so they're afraid, in a way, they're afraid of their suppliers. They're catering to the suppliers, not, you know what I'm saying? That's why they won't do anything about it.
I mean, alcohol is a $1 billion worldwide business.
Right.
$249 billion.
So that's why, despite all the warnings, all the studies in the world showing the direct link to 7 different cancers, I don't think you'll ever see in our lifetime any warning labels on your Kalik or your Heineken. But it took many years in going against the tobacco industry to actually see warnings on cigarettes.
I'm trying to say that our governments are responsible. It's why we go into these issues. You know, we have an economy that's tourism related. Our government's saying, oh, we need to own the tour. We're going from driving a tour bus to owning it, or working in a restaurant to own it. They say nothing about owning a hotel. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, what are we doing? Who are we governing for? You know, from when our government governed for us, then we would have these issues with the alcohol or the liquor store proliferation.
I agree. We need better governance in terms of licensing and allowing these. I thought it was prohibited to have liquor stores opening up in close to schools, for example. And I don't know why all of a sudden I see it all the time.
Well, you have them in the rallies.
Yes.
They say, the young men, we have all these people. We think these young people coming up for. Come for the free alcohol, the free rum. Many of them, especially down, you know what I mean, the poor, the guys somewhere there in front of the liquor store, they frequent them rallies. They can't miss them.
Yes.
You know, but anyway, thank you much.
All right, appreciate your call and your interesting remarks. So alcohol affects...
Well, Doc, what I want to say, I think the... And getting back to that statement you made, I think we should see some movement in that area. I think April 1st, when the licensing, the liquor stores are supposed to redevelop the establishment in a way that they're looking at how close are they to schools and churches and you can't come to the window anymore. You got to go inside.
And what about providing some documentation in terms of ID or driver's license or et cetera that you are of age?
All of that is supposed to be part of this redevelopment of getting your ID. The only question I have is, and always, you know, we got all kinds of laws in the Bahamas. We just don't ever execute it. Who makes sure or ensures that it happens? That's our problem.
Enforcement.
Enforcement of
monitoring. Enforcement.
But I wanted to also give you another statistic.
Well, let me just ask one thing. Worldwide, when we talk about first world countries, why is it, and we have, over 100 traffic fatalities a year, why is it that we don't have any measure in place to actually test drivers to see what their alcohol level is? When we talk about trying to save lives, when we talk about protecting the public, protecting society, that is something that's fundamental in almost every other country except our own.
Well, I don't know. I mean, certainly, I'm sure that the rank and file of the of traffic and the police force listen to the show, and so maybe, you know, that's a policy adjustment right there, and maybe get some resources to bring in breathalyzers. I don't know that they have them. I just don't know. But certainly that would be something to really enforce, because a lot of folks be driving drunk. You could see it. And you know, we talk about trauma, right? And the majority of traffic, fatalities, associated with people who are intoxicated, and a lot of folks who come into the trauma room just from blunt trauma because of accidents that are not fatalities, but they just come with injuries or minor injuries. A lot of them are intoxicated also. So yeah, mm-hmm. that should be another line of maybe prevention as the police are on the streets. And they see drivers are, driving in a reckless manner. Certainly, that should be, you know, something that they do.
And then we do have laws in place for seat belts.
And yeah, that's a primary prevention stuff, right?
It is. So, but how many persons have we seen through the decades come into the emergency room? And the common thing we'll see is no seat belt, because there's little to no consequences for someone not wearing a seatbelt.
See, again, that's an education thing, right? I mean, you should not enter a vehicle without putting on a seatbelt. And I think that comes with education. You should bring that up. You should educate children from their young. I know my kids, that's something that we impress upon them. You go in the car, you put your seatbelt on, right?
Whether you're in the front or back, right?
And so that's something that becomes cultural then. As soon as you get in, you put your seatbelt on.
But the typical Bahamian woman is driving with her 3-year-old and 5-year-old, not in the seatbelt, but standing in the back seat.
Yeah, and we should have, proper restraints for kids.
Well, I want to say, Doc, I don't think it's for the location. my take is and what I see is simply Bahamians don't follow rules. The only time they follow rules is when they go to the U.S. because they know that they're consequences. They put seatbelts.
They need some there.
All right?
Yeah.
But nobody checks to see whether you have on a seatbelt in your car or anything like that. And I keep saying it is because there is no follow-up and there's no check and balance. But they know that. They know that they're supposed to wear seatbelts.
Yeah, but, you know, we have safer cars nowadays, right? Yeah. It has to be a deliberate choice not to put on a seatbelt.
Yeah.
Most cars, if you don't have your seatbelt on, it's beeping. It's beeping. And you can't stop it. You can't shut it off. Most cars are like that now, unless you got a real old model car. But, again, you have to continuously provide the education for people. I still think so. People need reminders, right? I know they stop, but they still need reminders. Like, put it on, put your seatbelt on, and that's important. But I do agree with you. We have to start enforcing the law. We have to start putting meaningful consequences to infractions of the law, right? Put hefty tickets. Yeah. Make them pay. And I mean, I think you will then start to see a change. It takes time, though, but I mean, we got to start somewhere.
Got to start somewhere.
But there's so many, you will talk even to the young men. They'll say, you know what, I don't really drink, but come Friday, Saturday, they're binge drinking.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wanted to share with you a statistic that show what we drink. And according to this was done in 2016, but it says, which I'm sure is pretty accurate and probably more, 41% of Bahamians drink beer, 39% drink spirits, 17% drink wine, and 3% whatever that other is. But we do drink a lot of beer, a lot of rum, and a lot of wine.
I mean, alcohol decreases brain function. It decreases its decision-making. How many hundreds of persons have regrets from decades ago when they were young, and it's attributed to alcohol, whether it's a pregnancy that they didn't want, whether it's getting herpes, whether it's contracting HIV, whether it's being in a car accident that provided a permanent physical impairment because they were driving drunk. So there are too many young persons that don't believe or understand that there are consequences, that they are not Teflon, that things that they do can negatively impact the entire future, the trajectory of their life. And if they think like that, that whatever you're doing today can affect not just tomorrow, but a year from now, 10 years from now, maybe they'll be more responsible.
I want to bring something else up to you, which you probably didn't notice this. All the lampposts that you see as you drive to the airport, 30, 40 of them down, and you see signposts and everything, look at it. Young people drinking, lose control of their car. They knock all these lampposts down. You got 40 lampposts down. And it all has to do with them drinking and having a good time on the weekend or whenever. In my area, they got 3 signposts down. How did that come down? That I just saw today. That somebody was drunk and they ran into the signpost.
Yeah, and distracted drivers too.
Yeah.
Texting.
Yeah.
All right. So...
But when we talk about lowering our inhibitions, let's talk about how it affects the brain, how it disrupts the white matter within the brain. But we'll talk a little bit more about this interesting topic at the end of the break. This is Urologist Speaks.
Sunshine Anderson and Kenny Burns, the Isley Brothers, L. DeBarge, Stephanie Mills, and so many more. March 7th and 8th, Hard Rock Stadium. Tickets and info at jazzinthegardens.com. Jazzinthegardens.com.
Beulah Gal, can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody's yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns, where they hiding the drugs, who shoot who part of which gang, or who disturbing the peace with the loud music and the motorcycles.
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands. Or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto and surgical oncologist Dr. Wesley Francis. And we have community and civic leader Mr. Calvin Green. So we're talking about alcohol and its impact on our society. We've highlighted that alcohol is a modifiable risk factor. It's the third leading modifiable risk factor for seven different cancers. That includes breast cancer, where in the United States, studies have shown conclusively over the last several decades that at least one in six breast cancer cases in the United States is linked directly to alcohol consumption. So I'm just think about an interesting fact. When you go to a typical restaurant, what's the first thing that they provide for you? They provide free bread. They provide an alcohol or wine menu to select from. So both alcohol and bread drop your brain frontal lobe inhibitions. Both of them make it more likely that you're going to order more food and spend more money at the restaurant. It's all strategic. The bread is an investment on their part, as bread gives you an immediate sugar spike. Bread is free. They want you to consume that bread, which then pushes the serotonin levels in your brain and makes you happy and less inhibited. Serotonin also drops the frontal lobe brain function, which will make you a little more impulsive. The alcohol further drops your frontal lobe inhibitions and makes you even more impulsive, and you will be more likely to drop more cash in the restaurant. So it's all strategic. And that's the way society is run, by alcohol. When you look at the World Health Organization, there says that there is no safe amount of alcohol consumption. As alcohol breaks down the body, it can damage DNA and proteins in a way that may allow cancers to develop. It can also alter hormone levels and make it easier for the body to absorb other carcinogens such as tobacco, from cigarettes or cigars. And what do? Socially in this country, it's not very prevalent, although I've seen it increasing over the last, I would say, decade. There's not a lot of cigarette smoking, but there is a hell of a lot of cigar smoking. And that, men playing dominoes, men on the golf course, men hanging out on the corners. Cigars are almost like a status symbol in this. And that goes hand in hand. Cigar in one hand, a beer or a rum and coke in the other hand, or a vodka. And all that's going to do is lead to increasing your risk of carcinogens on two different levels. That's two modifiable risk factors. The number one and the third greatest risk factor. And over the years, just a cigar smoke and the alcohol is going to increase your risk of a head and neck or oral cancer.
Well, Doc, what about the new fad is what they call vapor cigarette now?
Even more dangerous than cigarettes.
I mean, let's talk about
And that's marketed to children.
Yeah.
So they have these flavors that are marketed to children. Even in North America, you got 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds smoking and vaping like there's no consequences to their action. So when we talk about the capitalist society, they're concerned about making making money. They don't care about the health of an individual or the public at whole. We need to be concerned about our own health. We need to be concerned about the health of our family, our friends, our neighbors, and our society as a whole. And that, obviously, the government has its role in terms of legislation. We talk about the proliferation of liquor stores in the neighborhoods in terms of policing juveniles consuming alcohol or even adults being charged for providing alcohol to young persons. That includes creating legislation for persons who are driving drunk, which is just as dangerous as someone going around with a unlicensed firearm and shooting in the air. At least shooting in the air is less likely to kill somebody than driving drunk at any hour of the day where you can go and mow down six children coming from school.
So, Doc, what I'd like to see is, I mean, the legal drinking age in this country is 18 years old. I would love to see that establishments ask people, where is your ID card to show that you are 18 to be able to buy a drink?
In the United States, it's 21 in most states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ours is 18. But even if we do that, that would help. Because you got 15, 16, 17-year-olds who are drinking like crazy.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And as I said, it starts from young.
And so, the statistics say the ages, we start drinking in this country from 15 years old. 15. Yeah, 15 years old.
So we have to look at the reasons why someone drinks as well.
And when you go to people's house, what is the first thing they do? They don't offer you food.
Every momentous event in our life, whether it's at a funeral, get a drink. If it's at a wedding, get a drink.
We celebrate.
We're celebrating a job promotion. We're celebrating a graduation.
It's cheers.
Our son just graduated from high school. Let's give him a beer to celebrate. That's the common.
Yeah.
It's too common in our society, and we need to look at ourselves and our reliance on anything. So we always have to ask the question:
right?
Can you stop drinking for 2 weeks? ask yourself that question. As you mentioned earlier, Mr. Green, Calvin Green, how many of us are quote unquote functional alcoholics?
And there's addictive properties, right?
It does.
There's addictive properties, and then you find people who go into withdrawals because they have such a dependency on alcohol. Absolutely. And when they stop, you know, they go into withdrawals. And we've seen a lot of people who, you know, for example, they come in for surgery, and you know, obviously you can't drink in the hospital. And then, you know, because they are unable to get a drink, then they go into delirium tremens, DTs, right? And so it's reminding me
25 plus years ago when I was an intern, we used to have so many persons going into DTs, particularly in the orthopedic ward, where there were typically healthy men. Many of them were in a alcohol-driven car accident. And they go into these DTs, and the only thing that some of the nurses will do is they'll give them a little bit of rum. Give them a little bit of rum. That's the only way you could control it. So you have to have rum on the wards to give to these men.
Well, we kind of stopped that, right? We don't do that anymore.
I say 25 years ago, but yes, that was the norm.
It was.
So we used to We used to do rounds at 10 o'clock, and we had to find out who we need to give rum to.
We give medication that simulates the effect of alcohol, right?
Yes.
Benzodiazepines, and that effect that affect the same receptors, and so effectively you're giving that to them, right? You're having the same, you're getting the same effect. You're just using it with other medication. I remember back in the day when I was in residency, it was a particular surgeon who. On that service, and when patients went into DT, she said, absolutely nothing. You just basically restrained them, put an NG tube in, and that's it. And they had to write it out. And you know, after about 24, 48 hours, they would catch this up. But that's the withdrawal. And these were functional people. These, you know, who just because they drank every day. And you think about it, there are a lot of people out there who have a glass of wine every night just to relax them.
Oh, they'll say it's an antioxidant.
It's an antioxidant.
It's good. It's good for my heart.
Especially the red wine, right? Because yeah. It's got this product called resveratrol that's supposed to be good for your heart also. But no, a lot of people become dependent over time.
And alcohol increase. We are already an obese nation. We're overwhelmed with
calories associated.
Yeah. How many persons in the society have become obese or overweight because of alcohol?
Yeah, and so it's the liver.
So
right?
Even stopping alcohol as a nation considerably will reduce the risk of 7 different cancers. It'll reduce the risk of dementia. It'll reduce the risk of gastrointestinal bleeds. Reduce the risk of pancreatitis, reduce the overall incidence of depression. There's so many ways that alcohol negatively impacts our society.
Being abusive to your wife.
Being abusive to your wife, or being emotionally abusive or physically abusive to your child. Look at the lack of productivity for a typical worker because of alcohol.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, one of the things, liver disease is an important side effect of continuous use of alcohol, and we see a lot of it, right? And then when you combine that with the excess calories that we take in, fatty liver, and liver becomes fatty and then becomes cirrhotic, and then every aspect of the body starts to break down as a result of this, that the body goes into a metabolic shutdown. And so, again, not only the cancer risk, we've already established that. We recognize the social risk, the effects in society, and then, you know, think about the cost to society and how, because alcohol costs money. I mean, where do these young kids find money to spend on buy this alcohol, right? And, I mean, on a Friday afternoon after the construction workers, I mean, that's probably the highest grossing time for liquor stores, right? There's a huge industry.
I don't really think it's really Friday, you know. From Monday to Friday.
Yeah, but Friday is when they get paid, right? So
that may see a little bit more increase in the revenue, but it's a steady stream.
Or how many construction workers are drunk on the construction site?
Yeah, that's another.
It's easy to say don't drink, but we have to look at why people drink. We talk about self-medicating. We talk about persons trying to deal with trauma from their past. That's the only way that they're able to cope. Our society, we've spoken about it many times. We've taught young boys from when they were young never to ask for help. Always suck it up. Never cry. Never show any emotion. Never mention that you have any weakness or that you're hurting or you're going through. That's why we have Fox Sail filled with men who in one moment of rage, they reacted badly and they can't take back that moment. So they pick up the bottle or pick up a knife or took up a gun and shot somebody or assaulted somebody or raped somebody out of anger. Rape is not a sexual act. That's an act of violence. And alcohol has driven so many persons to do things that they cannot take back and they regret for the rest of their life and their lives are changed forever.
It's disinhibition, right? I mean, you lose your ability to reason. I mean, even on a sober day, a lot of people have difficulty with conflict resolution. So when you do now take a substance that affect your sensorium, affect the way you reason, affect the way you respond, and you become disinhibited, then, you know, all acts of violence tend to show themselves, you know?
And there is help out there. There's so many persons that you, as a family member, as a friend, as a neighbor, as a church member, as a work colleague, you can see somebody's going through this, and they may not realize that, but there's so many, there's Alcoholics Anonymous, there's an alcohol unit at Sandlin's, and I was there when I just finished internship and thought about psychiatry, I was there for 6 months. I saw the wonders that the alcohol unit did for persons of all walks of life. And I remember maybe a year ago, we spoke about someone called in and he says he's a multimillionaire and that he had turned his life around because his mother forced him into that alcohol unit. And I remember he was from Freeport at Sandilands. And I remember it was remarkable. They literally would have a person come in and lay on the ground and they would act like it's their funeral. And it's basically a rebirth. So you've died alcoholic and you're reborn. Somebody is sober. And then to see these grown men on the ground crying when they see their family members talking about their life and what could have been. And that's what's going to end up. You're going to end up in an early grave. So we're here always on this show promoting longevity and improved quality of life. And alcohol is robbing you of both.
You know, but Doc, in order to receive all of those good things that you talk about in terms of the end product, you got to first admit that you have a problem.
This is true.
And Bahamians don't admit that they have a problem.
And particularly men are taught to never admit that they have a problem. Yeah. Never admit that they have a weakness. And many of their weaknesses and their emotional strife and problems that they carry from childhood manifests in terms of becoming an alcoholic.
Because that's the way. I had an uncle once who said that he would rather die than stop drinking. And it actually happened.
And we have to even look at it on an occupational level. Yeah. The police, for example, they deal with the worst of society. To see persons murdering children, to see young girls raped and their bodies in the bushes, that just wears on their soul. And a lot of police officers rely on alcohol to get through their life. And I've seen it myself. I've seen from a massive upper gastrointestinal bleed, I've seen men, good men, who are police officers, die in the trauma room over the years at Princess Margaret Hospital or at Doctors Hospital. So it's not just men who... Some of the best men in our society are alcoholics or heavily relying on alcohol, or alcohol is a compulsion in their life. It's not just, we're not just talking about those who or have no job and are on the streets and on the corners and smoking their marijuana and drinking and everything else. We're talking about pillars of our society. We're talking about pastors who are leading our communities. We're talking about politicians, those who run the banking system, accountants, physicians.
So you know, Greg, we always talk about getting to the underlying problem. Because, you know, alcohol, for some people, is perceived as therapy for their underlying problem. And sometimes a lot of people go through depression, mental illness, stress that is going on, and alcohol relieves all of that. And so then, this is how people become dependent. And so should we now try to focus on what are the underlying issues, the drivers of this, to see that alcoholism is more a symptom, more of an underlying problem.
But it's
that mental health issues that we have in this country that go unnoticed because people can't see mental health, not all the time, right? And a lot of people struggle and do not have the resources, whether they're financial resources or even social support resources, to assist them through difficult times. And then, you know, they use this alcohol then to self-medicate. We have a call.
Go ahead. This is Urologist Speaks. Hello. Good night.
Hello. Good evening.
Go ahead, sir.
Good evening. Is this Dr. Pinto?
It's Dr. Pinto, yes.
What name is?
Dr. Francis, hello. This is Dr. Pinto and Dr. Francis and Mr. Calvin Green.
Good evening, sir. How are you doing? This is Rocky.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing? Good, buddy.
I'm good, sir.
You know, I got a big problem with this as a 74-year-old man.
Okay.
My school, my government high, bestest friend is Dr. Robin Roberts.
Yes.
Okay.
As Dr. Pinto's mentor.
He's been my doctor a long time. Told me I have a enlarged prostate, but I don't have cancer. Okay?
Okay.
I've been through all this kind of thing. Listen to you talk all the time. Respect you, everything. But I have a problem with some things that are going on between medical practitioners that do things for the sake of making money. And sometimes I call Dr. Robin Roberts and I ask him questions about things that people say. Dr. Robin Roberts tells me, Sparky, listen to what I say. Okay? I have an enlarged prostate, but I don't have I don't have cancer.
Well, I would say a 74-year-old, 70% of 74-year-olds have an enlarged prostate. And I'm glad that you don't have cancer, and I hope that the proper investigations were done to actually ensure that you don't have cancer. Because 1 in 6 of us in this country are going to develop prostate cancer in our lifetime. But do you have anything to say in terms of our topic, in terms of alcohol and our country's reliance on it, and the negative impact that you've seen over your 7 decades of alcohol in our society?
Rocky going quiet.
Alyssa? Oh, we lost him. Okay, so we're talking about what alcohol does. It releases dopamine, a release of serotonin, and it provides a relief for anxiety. It reduces our inhibitions. So someone is overwhelmed with a life event. They're overwhelmed with impending work related presentation. What are they going to do? They're going to have a little alcohol.
But, you know, I want to answer Dr. Francis. He was asking the question, looking at the root problem. And Doc, while I have no scientific support to this, I will tell you that in my observation and knowing what I know and what I see is that it's not that we have a problem. This is just something that we do. This is something that we do as a country, as a nation. We love drinking. We love
drinking
our beer.
Is our culture then.
Yeah,
we love
our beer.
What you do, right?
Yeah, that's what we do. Yeah. So it ain't got to do with problems or anything like that. That's we spend our time drinking under the tree, on the wall, or wherever it is that we can find a place.
So you know, business people say culture eats strategy for breakfast, right?
Yeah.
So are you saying then that because this is our culture, no matter what strategies we come up with, this will continue to be a significant problem that we pretty much are not going to see any meaningful change or results?
Yes, I'm saying that. You can see the increase in the beverage areas and the restaurants. The more they talk about it, the more those areas increase.
But I think, as we always say, we are here voluntarily. We don't receive anything for this. In fact, I don't even accept any sponsorship for this show. I pay for the sponsorship for this show myself. I don't want to be indebted to anyone. I'm here speaking my own free will. What I want to say is we're here, even if we can stop one person from dying of alcohol-related either cancer or disease or gastrointestinal bleed, if we can inspire one person to stop drinking, to excess, we can inspire one teenager from not picking up a bottle and becoming an alcoholic. If we can get one person to realize they have a problem and seek help, we've done a tremendous and positive act.
Here's the thing, you know, I don't really believe that. I think that we can make some meaningful change. We just have to be intentional about those changes. And we have the laws on the books. We need to enforce them. People have to show IDs. People should, have some consequences out there. Our politicians who make laws need to put more stiffer penalties or laws on the books that will discourage the use. People have to get a license to sell alcohol. Maybe we could put a moratorium on that or limit the amount of licenses that are given out, right? There's some things that you can do because, you know, if we give up or we throw our hands and say, boy, you know what, this is part of what we do, this is who we are, and we watch everybody, you know, the patients that develop cancer as a result of this, the homes that become broken because of this, the innocent pedestrians that get knocked down because of this, we have to do something. And I do believe that there are ways of doing that. We just have to make a decision about it. And I hope that you know, our politicians are listening to us, or our lawmakers, we call them politicians, our lawmakers, so that they could put some you know, put laws there, and then judiciary that is listening to us, and put, you know, serious punishments and all that to then curb this, because it's going to be an epidemic of, well, it already is an epidemic, right? And it's going to continue to erode our society. And we can't sit down and watch the erosion of our society on multiple facets. Well, and I think each of us is responsible for that, right? And we have to live up to our responsibilities as honorable men, as men who understand, are educated, and men who understand the consequences of these, to continue to preach that.
Well, I think a lot of young men do not ever want to think about the abstract where, you know what, I'm having fun now, I'm living my life now, I'm in my 20s. I'm not worrying about what cancer this alcohol can cause me when I'm in my 40s or my 50s or my 60s. But let me put one thing out. We talk about what is the most important thing in our society. Yes, alcohol and its consumption is interwoven into the fabric of our society. But when I'm talking to young men and older men or middle-aged men, the most important thing to them is to be able to rise and rise again and to be able to perform. So let's talk about it from a physician's point of view, from a medical point of view. Alcohol negatively impacts your erections and negatively impacts your sexual performance.
We should have started there.
They're going to listen now.
We should start there, right?
That's it.
We should start there. You are not going to perform. You will get erectile dysfunction. You will not be able to perform as well as you think. You will not be 19 again.
Correct.
Okay?
Correct.
That's the key.
And I think that's what we need to start preaching every day. You will not be 19 again if you continue to drink alcohol. And then maybe we'll see something happen.
And I think if we put a warning label on our alcoholic beverages, may lead to erectile dysfunction. I think a lot of people will drink less.
We need to say will lead to erectile dysfunction.
It all depends on the severity, yes.
That's the key right there.
That's the key, man.
So we're coming to a close of a very interesting talk. What are your closing remarks, Mr. Calvin Green?
Well, my closing remarks would be to the young people of our country, and just to sensitize them and tell them, you know, they have got to look at, just like you say, if they don't stop, they won't be able to get it up at all. And even when they reach there, so I would talk to them and tell them, listen, get away from this alcohol.
And you, Dr. Francis, what are your closing remarks?
Your choices will affect your future. Make wise choices now.
Okay, Bahamas, I'll close, and we always talk to the men. Alcohol negatively impacts your erections and your sexual performance. Put down the bottle, and then you'll have a more fulfilling life. Good night, and have a safe week, Bahamas. This is Urologist Speaks.
Urologist,
you will find
he'll help you solve your problems on 96.9. Yeah.